Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Dr. Carl, our Australian science communicator, good morning to you. How are you?
And good morning to you. And look, let me just share with you, I've had a wonderful experience just an hour ago of seeing a whale breaching out of the ocean and coming down with a big fat splash. Oh my God, sometimes you're lucky.
Absolutely. But what is it about that? Why do we see something like that and our spirits soar? We've got an area called Hermanus in the Cape here. And my wife and I went down. August is whale watching season. And they actually ring a bell. They've got whale watchers and they ring a bell and everybody goes running just to see the whales. And somehow it just does something to your soul. What is that?
I definitely do not know. But I agree 100%. There's something about it of seeing nature just existing free of the entanglements of having to get up in the morning, go to work, pay the bills, put out the garbage, clean the dishwasher. There's something about just seeing a whale or nature or just going for a swim that lifts your spirits. And I don't know why, but I know it's real.
Absolutely, it is. And if you want to contribute to that conversation, let us know. 3451906189511019. What do you think it is? We know it as South Africans. We go to the bush, we go to the Kruger, and there's something magical about being out in nature, just being seeing it in its own, uninterfered with. There's something really incredible, and I would love to know what it is, why it makes our hearts soar, as in S-O-A-R. Right, after a hard day's thinking, do you get to a stage where your brain, where you can't brain anymore, you just can't think anymore? What is that? What happens to us that we get to this point at the end of a day where we might have had a very taxing day, and we just can't anymore?
Well, it's a weird thing. You're thinking, well, I'm just thinking. I'm not doing any work. But in fact, you are.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, suppose you've got to shift some bricks from here up the hill to there, and you have to do some muscle work. But when you think about your brain, it weighs only 2% of your body weight, but it chews up 20% of your blood supply, 20% of your food, 20% of your energy, and generates 20% of your heat. So weight for weight, it outclasses pretty well everything in your body in terms of energy expenditure by about 10 to 1. So you do actually work hard. Now, we have known for a long time that people do lose a little bit of some kind of mental functioning after a while. And we know, for example, that judges offering parole in Israel over a large sample size do worse the longer it is since they had breakfast. So they have breakfast, they start off with the first set of prisoners, and we're looking here at a sample size of about 1,200 prisoners wanting to have parole or early release over about eight of the major jails in Israel, and covering 80% of all prisoners coming up for parole in that window.
Right.
So we've got a good sample size.
Right.
At the beginning of the day, 66%, say two-thirds, get parole at the beginning, straight after they start. By the time you get to morning tea, it has dropped to not 30%, zero. If it's just before morning tea, nobody's getting parole. They then have morning tea, feel invigorated, come back, two-thirds get parole, and then it just drops down consistently until they have lunch, when only about 10% get parole. They have lunch. They're enervated again. They then, two-thirds of prisoners get parole immediately after lunch, and then it drops down to virtually zero, then they go home. And in the case of medical doctors, they're more likely to prescribe unnecessary antibiotics at the end of the long shift because they get exhausted. And we see this happening all through society. With regard to air traffic controllers, they've got hard work, constant attention.
Right.
And every 2 hours they get a half hour break. And so most of us would benefit from this. Bus drivers, clinicians, et cetera, et cetera. When you've got high demand cognitive thinking, you need to have a break. And so some scientists were thinking, well, we've been following this for a while. Let's do some measurements. And they suspected for various reasons that a chemical called glutamate that is produced as a result of heavy thinking in your brain could be the problem. And sure enough, at the end of the day, when you go to sleep, your lymphatics open up and the glutamate is flushed out of your brain. So they went looking for glutamate with a non-invasive scanning method, and they were able to point out that firstly, the glutamate levels increased massively, and secondly, in a part of the brain called the lateral prefrontal cortex, a part of the brain specifically related to heavy thinking. Now, does that prove that glutamate is the cause? Well, no. Firstly, glutamate is also absolutely necessary as a neurotransmitter in the brain, sending signals from here to there. So, firstly, a little bit is good, too little is bad, too much is bad, we guess. But secondly, this is just a correlation. And think about correlation. There's a terrific correlation between how many people get divorced in the state of Maine, that's up in the top right-hand corner of the USA, and the per head consumption of margarine. Terrific correlation for over a decade. Doesn't mean that people all over the USA eating margarine make people in Maine have a divorce, or the other way around. People in Maine get divorced and think, that's it, I'm going off to somewhere else in the USA to eat lots of margarine, that'll show you. No, it's just a coincidence. So we kind of think that this might be the case. We've got to do more detective work, but certainly what we know is that we need to have a break when you're working too hard. And that way you can come back to work with a higher efficiency. We all need breaks. It is not as though we're evil communist terrorists. We just need a break.
Absolutely. What was so interesting as well is we were monitoring people and did people's mental wellness during lockdown. And what we found was that because people were working at home, it was just easier to grab some lunch and sit down at your computer, eat your lunch, and carry on working. And what we tried to institute was to say to people, please don't eat your lunch near your computer. Go into the garden, go into a balcony, go and sit in another room, but please don't just continue to work because it's just easy to do that. Because ultimately, you might have more productivity for a short period, but you certainly don't have creative productivity, and ultimately it does us a lot of damage. It really has become a big problem in the workplace, hasn't it?
Sure, we are not computers, we are humans. We have strengths and we have weaknesses. And one of the weaknesses is that we can't work indefinitely. We need breaks every now and then. And so we play to our strengths, acknowledge those weaknesses, and then make our strong points stronger.
I did promise our listeners that we would talk about sewage. So I don't want to let you go before we do that. We have a few minutes left. Tell us about the secrets of the sewer. It sounds like an Agatha Christie novel.
Well, here's a weird thing for you. What is the thing that has the greatest mass of everything coming in and out of a city? And you're thinking, well, if it's a port city, there must be boats, or if it's a landlocked city, it's trains or some sort of ground transport. No, it's water. Right. And this water carries the waste products of humans, our whispered biochemical confessions. And by analyzing the water, we can find things in there linking us to epidemics or designer drugs or what sort of antibiotics people are taking. So with regard to antibiotics, there were some antibiotics that were commonly put into cleaning products that we thought will die very quickly once they went into the sewage system. It turned out they did not go die very quickly. They were, in fact, dangerous to humans. And as a result, triclosan has now been banned, and that was a good thing. And then in the early days of COVID, we realized that viruses could be spotted, and this led to a much improved way of being able to monitor what was happening to the diseases that spread around the society, and we could get advance warning of the disease appearing in different places. And we've even found it happening now with regard to polio in both New York City and in parts of London, and we're also using it to monitor monkey virus. So the sewage system can give us lots of information that can help us, but it can also be used against us to invade our privacy and to stigmatize certain types of society. So you can say, oh, well, they're all taking drugs and they're criminals. Let's just go and do something bad to them or something like that. So we need to learn both the artistry and the science of this new topic of research.
Very, very interesting indeed. And your timing is impeccable, taking us all the way through to 7:30. Dr. Carl, thank you as always.